Hey Pioneers, today we have an awesome in-depth interview for you guys only. It's with Jack Biddle of Three Cedars Retrievers. Jack is a Labrador retriever breeder and also a bird hunting guide in western Pennsylvania. Although he guides mostly in Pennsylvania, he will travel. He goes to North Dakota every year to do some world-class pheasant hunting, and he brings his dogs with him. He raises champion dogs, and he's the guy that I purchased my dog from. Boom. Jack is a wealth of knowledge on dog training, and today he's going to discuss a technique that he uses to train all his dogs that's good for Labradors, but also would be good for any other dog. It's training on a table. He's going to talk about the setup of the table and how he uses that table to get a dog to be obedient. The recording was done remotely, so it's not the best quality recording, but the information is so good. I know you're going to love it either way. I've hunted with Jack and his dogs and seen them in action. These are dogs that you can tell to sit and walk away for an hour, and they'll be sitting in that exact spot when you return. They're also capable of 500-yard blind retrieves, where with hand signals and whistles, Jack can direct them to a fallen object. They're incredible animals. They have a huge spot in my heart, and I hope you enjoyed this interview and the in-depth knowledge that you're going to hear from Jack Biddle, a guy who knows dog training better than anyone I've ever met. So, here we go.
Here. Sit.
The whole key to the table is getting the dog up on the table. It's gotten him in an environment that's a little bit less stable than he's used to.
Yeah.
The table is a comfortable height, countertop height. 16 feet is ideal. If you take a piece of plywood, rip it in half, so you got 24 inches by 8 feet, and put them end to end, you got 24 by 16. You want it to be solid, but not rock solid. So you want it to be fairly firm so you can work on it, so you can do a lot of things on it. But you don't want it so stable that the dog feels like he's walking on the ground.
Right.
You want it to be a little uncomfortable for them. I just use 2x4s. I think this is just 3/8 plywood with a 2x4 frame underneath it.
So when you picture this table, picture a long, thin table, a little bit wider than the dog's gate. At either end of the table are two posts. And above the dog, there's a long 2x4 that's running the length of the table. And a few inches below that, there's a cable. The cable has a pulley on it, and with clips, you attach the dog's collar to the cable, thus helping control where the dog can go.
It's just two uprights with a cross brace, but the key is the cable and the pulley system.
Gotcha.
That runs on it, because ultimately you want the dog to be able to move on the table unencumbered,
yeah,
but not be able to lay down, jump off, slip off the side of the table, and so on. Also, at the ends of the table, you notice there's anchor points at the end of each of the table, and those anchor points come into play when you're doing the force fetch condition retrieve, because you don't want to always do it at one end of the table. You end up with a left-handed dog or a right-handed dog, so you want to alternate back and forth. And there are times when you need to be able to really control the dog. We end up using them for like toenail clipping as well. We come up here, anchor the dog up.
I brush Boone a lot with them.
Anchor them up, anchor them tight, and they can't.
Yeah.
They can't move around, and it just controls all that. I added the rails around mine. Most tables you see won't have the rails. I add the rails on them because when I get to the point where I'm throwing dummies, it keeps them from rolling off.
Mine roll off all the time.
Because I don't have access to the backside of the table easily. So I put the rails on it, and I take the front rail off. The front rail is designed to be removable.
Oh, you have a front rail.
Yeah,
that's great.
Just laying up there.
Because mine's built against the wall, so the back's okay, but it's always rolling off.
Yeah, I have a front rail that I put on
when
it's got a gate where the dog goes up and down. And I use a ramp. You don't want your dog jumping up and down from this thing.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's hard on their joint. And I have that ramp around. I use the table for a lot of different things, although it's called a force-fetch table or a conditioned retrieve table. Conditioned retrieve being the polite name, force fetch being the common name for it. Most people have no real concept of what force fetch or conditioned retrieve actually is. They have heard something about it, and they've developed some sort of
opinion.
Connotation of an opinion of it, and usually it's negative because of it being called force fetch. And, you know, I don't need to force fetch my dog. He retrieves sticks all the time.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing.
Yep.
But anyway, with a table the way it is, it's such a convenient environment to work with a dog on. And I use it for a lot of training other than just the condition retrieve. I do a lot of heel work on here. I do a lot of hand signal work on here. This dog, when we get him off this longer sit, I'll show you some hand work with this dog.
Awesome.
He's already learning some hand signals yet.
Oh, and, man, I'm like, I know, you're the master here. Look at where Boone's at. I think, oh,
I'm also, I'm going to probably also introduce the whistle to this dog. This is a smart dog. This is a really smart dog.
While we were doing the interview, Jack had a dog on the table the entire time, and he was making that dog sit. The dog had been a bit of a problem for its owners. They hadn't been training him with the authority and the techniques that they should have been, and so he was acting out. They brought him back to Jack to save him. And Jack was doing an amazing job with this dog. So throughout this interview, you'll hear Jack refer to the dog on the table.
My biggest problem with him on force fetch is that he indicates he has it before I think he really has it. He's showing me that he has it. So I've been really, really slow pedaling him because I think he's saying, okay, well, this is what he wants me to show him, so that's what I'm going to show him, but I'm not sure I really buy into that yet. And with this dog in particular, he's a little, I'm probably never going to get the rock solid sit like I have with Babe and Ron with him, but I don't have that sit with Moss either.
Yeah.
Moss is nervous. He wants, hand it to me and get moving, you know, and that's what I think this dog is going to be. My suspicion is his problems are environmental, not, you know, whenever I hear that there's aggression in one of my breedings, you know, I've heard it twice now.
Yeah.
First time was with Luke.
Oh, yeah.
And when I got Luke back, I determined it absolutely was not the dog. It was environmental.
Yeah.
Now, I heard it with this dog. You know, is that something that's going on, or again, is it environmental?
Yeah.
And I've backed this dog into corners where he should have bitten me,
and
I couldn't make him act out. No. So I don't really believe it's temperament of the dog. I think it's just environmental circumstances. This is a very male dog. This is a dog who's a real dominant, one of the real dominant males.
So that seems like it would come.
And I suspect that these girls are timid around him.
Gotcha.
And he just senses that and is like, heck, you know, I can bully these guys.
Yeah.
And
ask Jack what the key to the table was. Why does it work so well?
You know, this table's a little rocky, and you know that's not a bad thing. You know. It makes the dog a little less comfortable than when he's on the ground because, you know, his four-wheel drive on the ground is, he's real comfortable with that. So you get him up a little higher than this. Also, you know, I'm at an age now where I don't want to be bent over, hanging over a dog all the time anymore.
I don't either.
So getting him up here, it puts him at eye level, at my level. So it's a lot easier for me to control him.
Is there something to that eye level, too?
I don't know if there is or there isn't. Most of my dogs don't look you in the eye. Ron is the only one he's really focused on your face. Babe a little bit, but the rest of them are more focused on the job they're doing, more so than looking you in the eye. Ron and Babe really look you in the eye all the time.
So the method Jack uses is force fetch. But the number one building block, which Jack explains, is sit.
To do force fetch, you really have to have a sit in place.
Yeah.
If the dog won't sit, it's pretty difficult to force fetch.
So explain basic, like, day one with sit. How do you get a dog to become where... I mean, how long has Kingston been here already? We got a clock for 13 minutes. He hasn't budged.
Yeah. you look for 2 seconds the first time, and then hopefully the next time it's 4 seconds, and you just build on that. A lot of positive reinforcement when they're doing the right thing, and a lot of nothing when they're doing the wrong thing. Not negative reinforcement, but nothing.
Gotcha.
So, you know, when we get them up here to sit, you know, it's like, sit. And then when they do it, it's great job, good, you know, very good, nice dog, good dog, pat the dog. And then as soon as he gets up, you stop.
Gotcha.
And you get him to sit down again, and, you know, you just build on that.
Now, do you repeat sit, or do you make him sit?
Probably initially, I probably say it too many times. Okay. I probably say it too much. But the idea is that you should say it once.
Yeah.
Kingston is at a point now where I say it once.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't get the behavior I want from that, then there's a reaction to that, whether I physically put him into a sit. I think you saw me earlier drag him from one end of the table. Because I gave him a hand signal to sit on that, and I didn't get the response to the hand signal.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a drag him back to the end of the table and put him back in a sit. Well, it's a case where this is a really smart dog.
Oh, yeah.
And I put a lot of pressure on him on the force fetch side.
Yeah.
I put more pressure on this dog than I've ever put on a dog before. But, yeah, I put a lot of pressure on this dog for two reasons. Number one, it seems like he can take it.
Yeah.
But number two is I'm trying to see if I can trigger some sort of negative reaction.
Yeah.
And again, I haven't been able to do that.
That's
yeah, he's doing pretty good.
He's doing great.
Yeah, he hasn't moved his butt, although he's not sitting up
Boone
pretty
does
as
that.
I as
he does
we'd
like a little scooch.
Yeah.
Especially when it's food time.
Kingston will do that too if I take the stick away, he'll be over my shoulder here.
Yeah.
But that's okay. You know, this will build by the end of the process. You know, we're 2 weeks into this. I'll probably have another 6 weeks with him.
Gotcha.
By the end of the process, I'll expect an hour.
Yeah.
And I'll bring him up here. I'll put him on a sit, and I'll go do something else in the shop.
See.
Yeah. Now I kind of have to be kind of aware of what he's doing.
Because
if he moves, then I'm going to correct him at that point.
But tell us a little bit about force fetch. Correct some people's opinions why you use it.
What force fetch is these dogs, and I'm speaking, you know, of a very targeted dog that I look at, okay?
Right.
I'm targeting a very high drive, really bred for intelligence Labrador retriever, okay? I really can't speak to other breeds and other types. I wouldn't know if my force fetch program would work for a German short hair pointer or not.
Right.
May, but I wouldn't know that. This
so
is
like table, basic sit, and that kind of thing.
Those are standard. Yeah, these are standard.
Force fetch is for an intelligence.
Force fetch, the way I do it, is what I'm looking for is I'm taking a dog that's already driven to retrieve.
Yeah.
But when they retrieve, they're working for themselves. You know, they're going to pick up the bird, the stick, the ball, whatever it is, because they want to do it.
Yeah, it's in them.
It's their instinctive behavior. Well, I don't want that instinctive behavior to be in charge. I want to be in charge. I want a partnership. I want a partner in this situation. So my job here with force fetch or the condition retrieve is to turn that and maybe even break that instinctive behavior, which is the pressure or what I think is the traumatic portion for the dog, and turn that into a command behavior.
Gotcha.
So I don't want him retrieving when he feels it's right to retrieve. I want him to retrieve when I tell him it's right to retrieve.
Right.
When you do that, when you have a dog that's that way, they'll retrieve anything for you at any time, and they just love it. It becomes their purpose in life, not to retrieve for themselves. So a dog that's properly, you know, force-fetched or conditioned retrieved, you know, they'll never damage a bird. They'll never drop a bird halfway back from a blind. You know, you can hand them something and they'll hold it for as long as you tell them to hold it.
Yeah.
So you know, when you have a dog that's like that, that obedience transfers into virtually their everything else they do.
Yeah.
You know, if they're that obedient on a retrieve,
they're
that obedient on a sit, they're that obedient on heel, they're that obedient. You know, it makes a much nicer companion to have around all the time because of that.
I think the first time that we saw your dogs, what impressed us, I mean, we saw that 500-yard blind retrieve.
Yeah, well, Moss is
that
pretty,
was amazing.
Yeah.
But the most, like, the thing that sold us was, like, do you see how long that dog just sat? We're like, I've never seen a dog sit that long. That was like, we need one of those.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we try to breed a companion hunter. And that, you know, with the emphasis on the hunter, make no mistake about it. My dogs are hunting dogs, you know.
Yeah.
And they probably... I probably tolerate some less than stellar companion behavior because I expect more than stellar
hunting
behavior.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Boone, he's a great companion.
And there's, you know, they are.
Yeah,
but it's a case where, you know, you have to set. I set very high expectations for these dogs. I have very high standards for them, and I expect them to achieve them.
Yeah.
I expect Jink. You know. The more I work with this dog has, you know, he could really be special.
Yeah.
I don't know that his owners are prepared to make him special, unfortunately.
I feel like that's one of the things I look at with Boone. Like, I see there's the smarts there, and I know I'll never have a dog doing what...
He's your first dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's your first dog. It's you know, you'll do better with the next one.
Yeah.
And I can
if
tell
my
you...
My wife allows me. The hair's driving her crazy.
Babe is a better dog because of all the lessons that I learned with Moss.
Yeah.
And Ron is a better dog because of the lessons I learned with Babe
so
and Moss.
Somebody's got to take the hit and be
first. Somebody's got to be first.
Yeah.
You know, so,
that makes sense.
And you know, as long as you have the desire to put into it and work with it, you know, it pays off in the end. I have to be honest with you. I'm finding that I would sooner do this work than the field training anymore.
Really?
I really enjoy doing this work with the dogs. Yeah.
The real basic force fetch
condition retrieve stuff and things like that. And I think it's the foundation that all the rest of that stuff will come from. If this isn't good, the rest of that stuff is never going to be great.
Right. This is what makes
if this isn't great, then you can't expect the rest of the stuff to be great.
So how does somebody, what is the basic principle of force fetch and how does somebody get into it?
Basic principle of force fetch. There's a thousand experts who have written ways to do force fetch.
Yeah.
And they're all probably adequate. Pick one and learn it and stick with it is about the best way to do it. The one I use is a 28, 29, 30-step program as written, and I have a tendency to make it into more like a 60-step program.
Yeah.
I don't go to the step two until I'm sure that the dog has step one. And that sometimes means the dog may be showing me his step ones, but I don't really believe him that he has step ones. So we're going to go when I believe it, not when the dog believes it.
So what do you look for? Just absolute?
No, there's no such, these are dogs. They're not humans. They're not robots. Each dog's personality is different. So, you know, in the process of doing this force fetch, I'm also learning the dog. I've learned, you know, that, like I said, this dog's not going to look me in the eye. If I put Ron up here, Ron's going to look you in the eye the entire time and never blink away from you.
Yeah.
But I think that dogs like this, which, you know, again, Kingston's, I think, a pretty smart dog.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be, he's probably more Moss-like than Babe-like in that, you know, I think this is a dog that will be perfectly capable of doing those 500-yard retrieves.
That's awesome.
Babe's never going to do 500-yard retrieves. No. But, you know, and again, Moss is never going to be anybody's best friend because there's a trade-off of those things. So you have to decide what you want. But as you go through each step, you're looking for, you know, when does the light bulb go on in the dog's head? And I can't tell you how to know that, you know, you just have to figure it out, you know.
Okay.
And if you move a few steps ahead and then you seem to hit a roadblock, then back up.
Go back
a couple steps back and then kind of reinforce those things.
Yep.
I still go back, even with Kingston here now, he's now up to what would be step seven or step eight.
Gotcha.
He's now starting to make a move for the dowel.
Yeah.
The dowel's on the table. It's no longer in my hand. He's starting to make a move for it. But I start each session pretty much by sitting on the table, making the dowel available to him, letting him pick it up on his own, and then holding it for a few minutes.
So you start still towards the
I still reinforce each one of those. I don't do it every session, but many sessions I do. These sessions are not just force fetch. You know, I'm working on healing on the table. I'm working on hand signals in here.
Yep.
I'm working on longer sit times. So, you know, I don't do everything every time. You know, you kind of rotate it around a little bit. The only thing that does happen is that one of the force fetch lessons gets integrated as part of this all the time.
Gotcha.
And then other than his time on the table, Kingston gets nothing. He's down.
Yep.
He's crated.
Yep.
You know, they get out, he gets out and he runs with the other dogs every three or four times a day, just like all the other dogs do. But he doesn't get any other training. We don't throw sticks. We don't retrieve this, you know. He's allowed to chase sticks with the other dogs, but not from a human, you know.
Yeah.
So we need him to look forward to this.
Yeah.
Kingston's the first time I've ever had a dog. Usually by about the second week, about this time I can open the door. And the dogs come in and they jump up on the table.
Yeah.
Kingston did that on day two.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He came right in, jumped up on the table. It's like, okay, well, this was fun. Let's go. Let's do some more of this.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we want. This is, you know, we want him to look forward to this.
Yeah.
Because right now he's working with wood dowels.
Yep.
But in the very near future, he's going to be getting dummies. And then after dummies, he's going to be getting Dokins. And after Dokins, he's going to be getting bird wings, and then he's going to be getting frozen birds, and then he's going to be getting live birds, and
nice.
So he's, you know, this is about to get a whole lot more exciting for him.
Yeah.
So as that excitement builds, I got to make sure that the foundations are there, so that I don't end up backsliding on it.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Before somebody gets into it, Jack, what do they need to time per day? What are they going to be able to do?
Initially, you're going to start two or three sessions a day, and they may be 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay.
Ultimately, you know, particularly if you do things like the sit and like that,
yeah.
It'll be two or three sessions a day, and you may spend an hour and a half or 2 hours.
Per session.
Depending on what you're doing. Now, if you're just doing just the force fetch, probably the most you're ever going to get into is about 30 minutes in a session.
Gotcha.
Because the pressure you're putting on the dog escalates all the time.
So the time investment before somebody goes out and gets a puppy, at least an hour a day?
Figure at least an hour a day, yeah. But now, the other thing is, you know, you don't want to go buy a Labrador that's been bred for a house dog and try to put him through a force fetch program. That's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, if you got a Labrador that's been, you know, 15 generations have been house, you know, been couch dogs, don't expect that to be a hunting dog. So, you know, and don't expect it to be able to take the pressure of a force fetch program.
And I can, from when we were looking for a lab, you know, we wanted a good pet, but I wanted to be able to go hunting with it.
Yeah.
You suggested go with a dog that's got the gear, that's got the personality of a
exactly.
pet. Instead of a more pet dog and hoping he would have the
gear. Yeah, if you take a house, a pet dog and try to make a hunter out of it, you know, whatever the odds are, 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 1,000,000, I don't know what they are. There's one out there, but there's, you know, 999,000 that are not there, and you're going to be really disappointed. And most people who have really underestimate what these dogs are capable of. You've had the advantage of seeing them.
Yeah.
You know?
That helped.
Yeah. Most people don't realize that labs can do that.
Yeah.
Even lab people don't realize what their dogs are capable of, because most of them, you know, relegate the lab to being, well, it's the retriever. That's all it does is it goes and picks up ducks when I shoot them. But, you know, there's more to these dogs than that.
Yeah.
Let me give him a little bit of a break here. Good job, bud. Good job. That was a good 26 minutes. Good job.
What's his best so far?
That was his longest so far.
Nice.
Hey, guys. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Jack. Jack is an incredible resource. Before I even bought my dog, I called him up to ask questions about buying a lab. He spent over an hour on the phone with me, and I wasn't even a customer yet. If you're interested in having a bird dog, an amazing dog, the best quality dog you can get, I've owned one of Jack's dogs and I will be getting another this year. And I can attest to the quality that his animals are. They're amazing. If you want to reach him, Jack Biddle, Three Cedars Retrievers, look up their website, threecedarsretrievers.com, and tell him that you heard about him from Homestead. Thanks, Pioneers. You guys are the best. Thanks for supporting us. And we got more great episodes, Pioneer-only episodes just like this, coming soon.